Hi, and welcome everyone to the 135th episode of CRM Rocks. Today, we have Mark Christie from Proxima 3 to talk to us about unique field service customer cases. So that's me, Marcus Allansen, and Malin Matnes. How are you today, Malin?
Thank you. All good to be back with a normal episode.
Yeah. So I still have a bit of a thing with my nose, so probably the listeners can hear that, but hopefully it's better soon. So we're introducing a new segment here, the Marketing Minute with Malin.
Yeah.
So what's your marketing minute today?
Oh, trying to keep it under a minute, that would be hard. It's more of a what have I been doing the last couple of, months that I want to talk about with marketing or customer insight journeys or data or whatever. And yesterday I actually created a volunteer and a podcast form for Scottish Summit in customer insight journeys. So I had a small bit of issue, so I had to do a bit of a business rule, and I love low code, so everything I can do myself is good. And I created all the forms and the emails and the journeys to send that out. So now everyone who wants to be a volunteer for Scottish Summit or who wants to join the podcast for Scottish Summit with Rex and Paddy can fill out a form, and I'm sure we can post the links in the description.
Sure.
Yeah. The emails you get from there and the forms you're going to use, that is all customer insight journeys, and the page you're going to do that from is a power page.
Nice.
Yeah.
Look us up on Facebook as well and LinkedIn. So we are CRM Rocks on LinkedIn and Facebook, and of course, crmrocks.com. And today we have Mark Christie has 19 years of Microsoft Dynamics experience. Having initially worked in a technical support capacity, he quickly moved into consultancy and then onto an advisor role in solution architect. Welcome, Mark Christie.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yes, not too bad. It's quite interesting hearing your own bio back and thinking, I can't even remember those initial days.
No, that's nice. And even though it's short and sweet, I still struggle with it. Every episode I have to cut in that. So now I said too much to the listeners. What is your favorite garment?
Garment? Oh, it's got to be hockey tops. I like to wear hockey tops quite often.
Yeah.
Or vests. It's either if I'm outside, it's a hockey top. If I'm inside, it's like bright multicolored vests.
Nice.
No, they're very nice. Not nice at all. I thought you were going to say shoes, or is that not a garment?
That's not really a garment.
Perhaps not. What's your favorite garment, Malin?
I saw that question and I was like, I have no idea. I'm not that into like clothes and everything, but I do when I go out to events and everything, I usually wear dresses, but I'm also very cold all the time. So, and I live in Norway, which is not a good combination. So I prefer to be warm. So I have this mega hoodie that is super awesome and super warm. So I think that would be my favorite garment.
Yeah, nice. All right, then. So tell us about your unique field service experience, Mark.
So I'll maybe prefix it a little bit around. Everyone thinks that field service is just a person in a van going to fix maybe a wood-burning stove or fix somebody's internet. But anytime that I've been speaking to customers, that's never the case. There's so many, when you speak to them, there's so many different use cases that they've got, different requirements. And listening to the requirements, it's like, well, that's just field service. No matter what the context, and there's some very interesting context that we have, it's still the same principles apply. It's I need somebody to go somewhere. I need to book that person. They need to go. They need to say they've been there. They need to finish the job. That, I mean, that's the main principles of it. And yeah, it lends itself to lots of different topics.
You've focused on field service now for quite some time, have you not?
Yes. I have been doing field service since Microsoft bought Field One Sky. I started a job with a large partner. My first week, I was sent to London because Microsoft had just bought this thing called Field One Sky. So I ended up being one of the first people in the world to be able to look at Microsoft's version of field service. So that was quite an interesting learning experience.
And for us not that versed in, when approximately was this?
I mean, I thought I had 15 years worth of CRM experience. So that could be a difficult one. So we're talking Ebex DXC time. So we're talking maybe 10, 11 years ago.
I will have to try to check that up, because that's some of the history here, and I'm not sure when that happened. But that's one of the few acquirers into Dynamics that actually been successful, that they haven't just deprecated and turned down.
So there's another one that I've actually used as well, and that was even pre my DXC time. I worked with a company, and they had a product called Mojo Surveys, and Mojo Surveys was bought by Microsoft, and it is now what is known as Customer Voice.
Yeah, nice. So I can see here Microsoft acquires Field One, and that announcement is from 2015. So that's 9 years ago now.
Yeah, give or take a couple of years. So I'll go with that. That's quite good for memory.
Hi. So, but you're also, last episode, we had special guest Ben Vollmer on, and I know you and him have worked closely together as well on field service.
Yes, Mr. Vollmer is an interesting character. My first ever talk, so the first ever time I ever spoke at an event, it was at Microsoft in Reading, and I was talking about field service, and there was this guy sitting in the front row. I'm like, who is this weird guy that keeps asking all these really awkward field service questions? And that turned out to be the head of sales for field service. So that was quite interesting.
And then you were best friends.
I don't like the guy. I tolerate him.
We know that's wrong.
Aye.
Yeah. What was the first, or should we go with a warning before we come to the actual topics?
Yeah, I mean, we could do a warning. There's nothing that's really bad, but there is some content here that might trigger people.
Yeah. So if you're very sensitive and are easily disturbed in your stomach, do you say that now?
Yeah, we could go with that, yeah.
Yeah. Then perhaps you should pause now or forward until the next episode.
Try again next time with a less sensitive topic.
Yeah. All right, then. So what was the first one that you...
So the first one is difficult because it sets the scene and sets the tone for the rest of them. So yeah. There is a large US and UK-based agricultural company who are the world's leading producer of cow and pig semen.
Yeah.
I'm just giving everyone a second to let that just sink in.
He did say semen, yes.
Now, before we even get into talking about what was actually done on that project, did you know that for the top bull, to have a vial of semen from that top bull is worth $1 million?
No, I was not aware of that, but that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money for what it is.
Yeah.
And it just shows you how big that industry is. And because field service isn't the cheapest component of Dynamics. There's a lot of money to be spent to it. You need separate licensing if you're going to do RSO. So it is a more expensive product. So that's why companies this size are looking at them.
And to stop you a tad bit, you said RSO. For people who don't really know that, what's that?
Don't care about it. It's too expensive. Nobody uses it.
Okay.
It's resource scheduling optimization.
Yeah, thank you.
But as I say, it's very expensive. It's actually got cheaper, but it's not the most widely used additional component in field service.
No, you have to pay extra for it. It doesn't include in the base license.
No. So
what did you do and what did you learn from this field service user case?
I learned a lot about the agricultural industry and what they do. Now, I'll go back to kind of what I said a minute ago or at the start. The principles for field service are, I need somebody to go out and do a job. I need to schedule it. I need somebody to physically be there and say they've done it. And I need to finish it off and send an invoice.
Yeah.
So with that being said, here we go. So what would happen, I'll give you the business process. The farmer phones up and says, I've got a bull who is ready to mate. But the female bull, the sow, may not be ready to mate. So what they do is they phone up and say, can I have a collection, please? So yeah, that's fine. They create the work order. They schedule the person to go out to the job. Now, I never once asked the question on how they call it product as well. Bull semen is called product. So they collect the product. I don't know if they just physically collect the product or if they make the product there. They collect
the product.
They collect. That's okay.
They collect a product. And what they do at that point is they actually freeze it in a container of liquid nitrogen.
Mm.
So they take that liquid nitrogen, they take it back to the warehouse, and that's just stored with everything else. Then 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, the farmer phones back up. Okay, I'm ready to use that frozen product. So again, we create a work order. We create the booking for the person to go out. They collect the product. They take it. They inseminate the sow. Once they're done, they say, I've visited twice. There's a calculation done to find out how much liquid nitrogen was used based on the number of days that it was stored. And then an invoice is produced.
Huh.
Now,
okay.
It is basic field service. I want something done. I'm sending somebody out. I'm invoicing at the end of it.
Yeah. So the product is a bit unique.
Yeah, it's just a different product.
Yeah.
But saying that, that's not the only cow semen project you've been involved with, is it?
Oh, no.
No. So this project, 10 years later, has actually come back. And I'm in contact with the customer at the moment because they actually want more work done. But I've also working on a prototype at the moment for... Have you ever heard of Aberdeen Angus beef?
Yeah.
So Aberdeen Angus beef is obviously, it's produced in Scotland. It can only be called Aberdeen Angus beef if it has met the genetic markers of Aberdeen Angus standards. So I'm working on a project that is documenting the lineage of beef. So when a calf is born, they do DNA tests on that calf to decide whether it has come from the right parents, how long it's been alive, when it can be slaughtered. So it's definitely a very interesting and very lucrative industry.
So that means that the price of the meat is actually quite high. So then it's worth investing these processes and time to do all of this.
Yeah, so what they want to do is they want to know what animal has Aberdeen Angus marker in it. And any time a cow is slaughtered that has Aberdeen Angus marker, the Aberdeen Angus Beef Company actually get a percentage of that sale. So it's in their best interest to know all of the cows that are being sold and what their lineage is to see how far back it goes. Because obviously the further back the lineage that goes, the higher percentage. So if both parents come from Aberdeen Angus stock, then they get a higher percentage.
Hmm.
So yeah.
It's like a royalty thing?
Yeah, it's like a royalty, yeah.
Yeah.
When we went to visit them, in the basement, It was like going into a museum. They had written on binders that had the first cow sale in Scotland written in wet ink on, and the guy opened the book, didn't have gloves on, like, you know how you expect them to have the white gloves. Yeah. It was just unbelievable. The whole room, it was like an air sealed basement, but it just had every single record right the way back to, I think it was Black Betty was the name of the first ever registered Aberdeen Angus cow.
Hmm. And here I thought that Scotland was full of sheep.
Yeah. So the original company that I was talking about, they also done sheep and they also done pigs as well.
Yeah.
But the main money is in cows.
Yeah. All right.
But that's not all weird stuff you've done with the field service, is it?
Oh, no. I could be here all day.
So what's been your favorite weird, or I'm not going to say weird, but unique field service project?
So we could go peeing in cups.
Go ahead.
or we could go unique things to collect. It's a choose your own journey here. Which way are you going?
Well, I want both. I don't, yeah.
Let's go for the unique things to collect.
Okay. So again, field service principles. Yeah. I'm coming up. I need something collected. I'm scheduling that collection. I'm going out to do that bit of work and then storing it. So the principles are all the same. So somebody phones up. Hi, I've got a dead body to collect.
Yeah.
And okay. We're not talking cows.
We're not talking cows, we're talking people. So when we look at resources in field service, resources can be companies, they can be people, they can be equipment. So what we need to do is we need to schedule one of our sub-companies to go out with a hearse and a coffin to collect a body. So we search, and there's certain timescales that they need to be collected in. So the schedule board, we say, right, okay, it's in this postcode area, I need this size of coffin, and I need it to be collected in the next 3 hours. So that's your search criteria. You click search, the schedule board comes up and says, here is the available funeral directors to come and collect the body. You book it in, the funeral director pops up on his phone like a ghost saying, ba-ding! Here we want somebody collected. They go out, they collect the body, they then bring the body back, and then they will obviously store the body. And when the body is stored, that is then, as crude as it sounds, we're checking itinerary into the platform. Now, obviously, with this project, we renamed a lot of the components within Dynamics to make it more, not user-friendly, but more humanized than collecting bodies and things. So it was done that way. But after the body was collected, the next part of the journey is we need to find what kind. Is it a burial? Is it a cremation? What local funeral homes or what local cemeteries are there? Those were all things that were having to be booked. But again, same principles. You just follow exactly the same things.
I'm now dying to hear about the peeing in cups. What on earth could that be? Because now you've had cow semen and dead human bodies.
Yes. So this was an interesting one. And this was, it wasn't even a UK-based one.
Pretty interesting.
It wasn't a UK-based one. I can't even remember how we got this as a project. But it was for a large US company who do drug testing of employees.
Mm.
So what would happen is there would be a drug test requested by a company. So they would call up this company and say, right, we need somebody to come out, or we need to send people to your facility. So in field service, you've got facilities, and that could be a meeting room in a building, or you could have a resource, which could be a location at the customer. So I need somebody with this skill set, because there are different types of drug testing you can do. There's the peeing in the cup, there's the blood, there's hair. There's about 4 or 5 different types of drug testing. So somebody with the right skills had to be scheduled. They had to be scheduled with the right equipment to then be able to go out and do the testing. Then at the end of that testing, there was an invoice created. Once the invoice was created and paid, then the results of the drug test would then be sent out to the customer. Again, same field service principles. I want somebody, I'm scheduling it, they're going out, it's getting done.
Now I'm more wondering, have you had any traditional field service projects?
I'm working on three at the moment. I am working on three. So there's, I've got two other ones that are, I would say, a little bit less unique. And what one thing I would actually caveat this with, these were all projects that now could potentially be done in universal resource scheduling. They wouldn't all have to be done in field service. The schedule board and the booking is the main part of it. So I did work on a government project, and the outcome for that project was reintroducing female offenders back to society. And that would be taking them out of the prison, physically collecting them from the prison, taking them to a location, so wherever that house was, and that was a resource, booking meetings for them to get, have you ever seen the electric tags they get when they come out of prison that go on their ankles?
Yeah.
Yep, fitting one of those to them. So that, again, was a piece of equipment that was tied to a person, and it needed somebody with a certain skill set to fit it.
Hmm.
So that those are quite unique and different projects.
But you can look at that as you had to have a certain certification or something to be able to do a certain work, to be able to be scheduled to do that work.
So there's actually three different levels of that. The person who would be collecting you from the prison had to be a social worker. The person who was introducing you to your property had to be a tenant advisor from the local council. And the person fitting your tag had to be a DB, so what I can't remember what they call it. Yeah. But there's a database that you need to be on to say that you're not a criminal. Like a criminal check. They've had to have a criminal check done on them before you go on it. And that expires every year. So it's a certificate that's got a rolling time. Now, the last one, and I've got this down as unique, and the more I think about it, I don't think it's unique, but I think for the time, it was like cutting-edge technology. Now, we worked with a company that had Scottish government contracts for putting sand or salt down on the roads, for cutting football pitches, for chopping down trees. And one of the things that we'd done is we actually took the Met Office weather API, and whenever there was an alert for snow in certain areas, we would automatically create a work order. That work order would then go to the van who were out with all the salt, and they would go to the location with the latitude and longitude where the snow or ice was forecast to be.
Hmm.
Now,
so that's very predictive instead of reactive. So that's, yeah, nice.
Now, at the time, so this project was maybe about 7 years ago, and at that time, there was nobody pulling any API feeds to do weather and do things like that. So that, at the time, was really cutting edge. But the other side of the business, so we talked about that being reactive. So it's kind of or a bit more reactive. We're reacting to what the weather's going to be, and we're going out to do it. But they also had proactive maintenance, and that was going out, and they would have contracts, so every 3 weeks, I need to go and cut the football pitch. Every 6 weeks, I need to go and put lines on the football pitch.
Yeah.
And that was just scheduled. We had what's called a booking agreement or a booking arrangement. And that would say every 3 weeks, we're going to this location to do this bit of work.
Okay. But
they managed to automate their whole contract. There was no need for somebody sitting scheduling the work, because that's where a lot of this is people sitting with the schedule board, schedule this job, schedule that job. There was no need for that. Everything was either automated by the booking agreements or it was automatically pushed by the Met Office API.
Saving time by working and using the technology that exists.
I know, who would have thought that that would work for people?
How easy would you say some of these cases were to get started for the customer?
So the original one, the cow semen collection one, was quite a difficult one because they'd never done any of their billing out of CRM. It was done out of F&O.
Yeah.
And at that time, dual write didn't exist. So this was all, it was actually a scribe. So there was a scribe job that ran and updated based on certain triggers. There was a lot of planning to do with that. The field service implementation was actually the easy part. The difficult part was actually mapping out the fields that needed to go over to FNO.
Okay, so describe integration then from Dataverse to FNO.
And back as well. So, that, I mean, I'll be really honest. Field service as a product is not that difficult. It's all data-driven.
I would say you would need, like, because there are a lot of terms. So when you do training for the, or when you study for the CRM fundamentals, you also have, and I think there's at least one or two slides purely on these are the different terms in field service and this is what they mean. So there's a lot of different terms, new terms.
There is, but I don't think they're difficult. I mean, skills, certificates, bookings, resources. I mean, if you're clever, it's not difficult.
Everything's easy when you know it.
So what would you say did you learn from these cases that we have talked about here?
That not everything is as simple, or sorry, not everything is as complicated as people make out. And that's kind of why I try to reiterate a lot that it's the same process. Regardless what industry you're in, if you can see a pattern, then and it fits into that pattern, then it can work in there. And that's why it's easier to spot field service opportunities now than it was 5 or 6 years ago, because I've got to the point where I know what the pattern is. I know how it works. I'm working on a project at the moment, and they are doing, if somebody buys a house and the builder says there's not a problem with the wall, and the tenant says, yes, there is a problem with the wall. We get an automated email, and we're actually using Copilot. So we're using Copilot to automatically generate the work orders, because a field service Copilot can do that if it can match the account. So we're automatically creating the work order. That work order is then saying, you need to go to this property and do an inspection on whether it's this wall or this roof or the door has a crack in it. But you need to schedule the right person. So they need to be, are they an architect? Are they a surveyor? Are they a plumber? Are they an electrician? You need to schedule the right person to go out. And the government project I'm working on is heavily field service, but I can't tell you what's going on in that one. That's top secret.
That's okay. What are some do's and don'ts that the customer learned or you learned from this product?
So the biggest thing that I will tell anyone is do not change any of the booking statuses in field service. Now, I'll tell you why. Believe it or not, a lot of the plugins and workflows, not even Power Automate's workflows, are hard-coded with the names, not even the values. They're hard-coded with the names of the statuses.
Wow.
So you have to use it in English then?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's been on the roadmap now for several years. And Andrew actually sent me a document today that says you can update the label now, but you cannot add a new one or change the value. I still don't trust it, and I would never recommend doing it. That's one of the biggest things. But what the more projects I do, the more I learn. I talk quite often about field service just being about data. I've got sessions where every slide is just, it's about the data. It's about this bit of data. I genuinely think if you learn field service as a product, you would be able to do a field service implementation in 20 days.
That's pretty fast. Yeah.
It's all data. As long as you can explain what the data is. So what sort of certificates do you have? Okay. What sort of skills do you need? What's the proficiency model of that? What products do you have? What services do you have? How long is one of these services? What sort of areas do you work in? As long as you're able to describe them correctly to the customer, They already know all of that data. They already have that information somewhere. It's about extracting that from them and putting it into the right format. Once you've got it into that format, you can literally throw it in a field service and it works.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Well, so I mean,
you probably, hopefully, you've learned a lot. If you could go back now with the knowledge you have. Well, you kind of are going back to your first customer. Do you not say that?
Yeah, I'm back to the first field service customer, yeah.
Yeah. Do you now immediately when you go into the solution, do you see, ooh, this is where we should have done it differently, or this is now, or has just the product changed that much?
I think your naivety that I look at my old solutions is probably the biggest part of that. My role now has changed from what it was when I was delivering. Now I just give the ideas and I let other people do the doing. So yeah, I would maybe design things differently, but it's now more do as I say, not as I do.
Mm. So if other sperm companies come along and wants a new solution, you're the king of sperm.
I wouldn't phrase it that way, but I have knowledge in that particular industry, yes.
What's something common then from these cases that you've found more than just the process?
So the biggest thing, and I find this really weird, is every time you go in to speak to one of these customers, they always say, we are unique in what we do. It's unique. Nobody else does what we do. And you can map out their process in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, we're so unique. This is what we do.
Is that not all CRM customers, though?
Yeah, there is a bit of that, but I mainly work on field service projects.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
So we had, as I mentioned, Ben on last month talking about the release wave one for field service. But how do you look at the future for field service?
You're just trying to get me in trouble.
It's my job.
So I'll be honest, I got in trouble recently for a post. I mean, I get in trouble for all the things I put on social media, so this shouldn't be surprising. But I have a view that within the next couple of years, we will have Power Apps for Sales and Power Apps for Customer Service. Power Apps for Sales will be sales and marketing, and Power Apps for Customer Service will be customer service, field service, and omnichannel. I feel that's the way that the products are going right now. So there will be field service. I don't know if it will still be called field service, but I think it will be more a combined.
Do you mean marketing-wise or more licensing-wise? Because now there's a difference between Power Apps and Dynamics.
Yeah, I think that the term Dynamics 365 will exist only in a finance function. And anything that we see as basically a CRM app, sales app, etc., will become a Power App. Brand-wise, pricing-wise, marketing-wise, it will just be a first-party Power App soon.
Why not a Copilot?
It may be a co-piloted Power App on Fields. I don't know.
Until someone goes through the rebranding and did that not happen with field service whenever someone went through and changed fields to columns?
Yes.
And suddenly there was a lot of column service.
Oh no. Yeah, no.
Somebody done a find and replace. When we went from entities and fields to tables and columns, somebody just done a find and replace. So for five.
I'd learn.
Yep. No. In product.
In
product. Somebody done a find and replace. It only seemed to be on the back end, so it was only within Dataverse. There was nothing front end. However, it stopped everything working.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was quite interesting.
So name changes aren't always the best.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
Yes.
So what's up for you? What's in your inbox? What you're looking forward to?
I'm working on a very interesting project right now that's got about another month to run. Once that's done, I've actually got a couple of projects that are coming in, one field service, one kind of total custom Power App. I'm actually looking forward to designing something a little bit different. I like the creative part of being able to do something that's not, well, as you've probably heard, something that's not out of the box.
Yeah.
So I've got some interesting projects coming up. I've got a lot of exam writing to do. We also have quite a lot of events as well that we're speaking at over the next few months.
Yeah, so actually when this podcast releases, we are at MVP Summit in Seattle.
Okay.
So this will be released on the 14th of March.
Okay.
So I'm hoping you have a good time.
Yes.
I hope so as well. But other than Seattle, you also have a lot of other travels to other events you're going to.
Yes.
Which ones are in the nearest future?
You have my calendar. You can tell everyone.
Well, we're both going to be in Dynamics Mind.
Okay.
Yeah, and in Color Cloud in Hamburg.
Okay. Anywhere else that we've got booked in?
Well, I did start with going through what I did in marketing yesterday, and that was Scottish Summit. And you are still one of the original organizers of Scottish Summit, are you not?
Yes.
Yes. So you also have a bit of work leading up to that in October.
Yes. Do you still call yourself the Free Bearded Guys, or was that a...
Ian got rid of most of his beard. Ian's beard is like very pathetic now.
Okay.
There's the beards have kind of gone.
Call yourself that.
Not really. And we try to be more inclusive. So three bearded men isn't the most inclusive thing in the world.
No, that's, yeah. Both of us would disqualify.
Yes.
All right, then. And then we can find the D Mark Christie on social media.
Yes. You won't find a lot of activity. I am there mainly so that people don't steal my identity.
Okay. I'm
probably most active on LinkedIn, where I'm just noising up people on products or product groups, or even funnily if this is going out, a few weeks ago, I was posting about Copilot just to wind people up as well. So,
yeah.
I thought his account had been hacked. But...
Who would you recommend as a future guest on this podcast?
Oh, now you've put me on the spot. Oh, somebody interesting that's opinionated. Yannick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The main reason is I can give you about 10 trigger words that can turn your podcast in from a 3-minute podcast to a 3-hour podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, talking about you and him and a couple of other guys did the old man yelling at the cloud panel at Tallinn, did you not?
Yes.
Yes.
A great ripoff of an amazing Simpson episode.
Yep.
That wasn't, do you know what? People have said they were actually disappointed that there wasn't even more yelling at cloud, that we were actually quite entertaining and educational rather than being grumpy people. So we might have to take this on tour and just fire trigger words in to get people going.
Hmm. Yeah, sounds like a good idea. So, and I know Yannick has just finished a very big project as well. So maybe we get Yannick to yell about dual right. That would be fun. Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah.
Coming for Yannick.
All right, then. Thank you, Mark Christie, for your participation in CM Rocks.
No worries.
So that's where the audience can find Mark Christie. Where can they find us, Malin?
They can find us on LinkedIn. I'm searching for CRM Rocks on Facebook, also CRM Rocks, and of course, CRMRocks.com.
Yeah, so thank you for listening, and see you next time on CRM Rocks.